You got a little Ouija with Paddy Power on this one, then?
Yeah, mate. Big man to score any time. I'm backing him.
And it looks like it's the big man who's coming off.
Oh, he's going to struggle to score from the bench, pal.
Oh. Fear not, punter, because with Paddy Power's super sub, your bet carries over to the player coming on.
Y'all ready for this?
So now, all subs are super. Paddy Power. Football, you gotta love it. Valid on selected leagues and markets only. Pre-match and in-play bets on qualifying player outcome selections only. T's and C's and exclusions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome along for the second time this week. We're back looking ahead to the May meeting at Chester. Thursday's card we're going to look at might even have a bonus look at Huntingdon. And when I say we, I mean Rory DeLargy. Rory, how are you?
I'm grand, thank you very much. How are you, PK?
I'm fabulous, thank you very much. I'm ready for another strong week. You are podcast number 2 of 4 this week on the From the Horse's Mouth. Well, I say 4, actually 5. There's 4 horse racing podcasts. But the big betting week, the big betting event of the week, as you well know, Rory, is?
It's Eurovision, isn't it? Everyone loves a bit of a punt on Eurovision.
Do you know who's favourite without looking?
I don't know. I've had no interest so far at all.
Oh, so far? Okay.
No doubt. I won't be able to avoid it for the rest of the week. So some judge will tell me that, Luxembourg are a certainty to finish in the top 6 or something like that.
I haven't seen the old Luxembourgers, Luxembourgians in the top 6 in a while. The horse is okay. It's Croatia who've got the favourite. Well, the band are called Baby Lasagna.
Baby Lasagna, tremendous.
The name of the song is just the 4 noises he makes when he's repeating the chorus. It's like tum di di da da.
Well, that's in fairness. That's songs with titles like that. I've got a rich and varied history in Eurovision.
It's a winning formula.
They've done the research, obviously.
It's a winning formula. Well, Ireland have a chance this year. Did you hear that?
Have they not learned their lesson?
We've learned our lesson. Well, yeah, but we can't afford. I think we can afford to host it if we do win it. But yeah, we have a chance because they've completely changed the way they're doing it. They're not going to send a silly ballad or a silly kind of duet or whatever. But it's an edgy tune. Bambi Thug is her name. It's, and when I say edgy, it's
Bambi Thug.
Yeah, Bambi Thug. Check it out. It's dark. It's catchy. It's screamy. It's stage. Yeah,
that's like word association, but in reverse. I say Bambi, you say the last word that comes to your mind.
Thug.
Yeah.
She's definitely different. Chance, apparently. I'll be talking to Stephen Cass and the well-known Eurovision pundit, Frank Hickey. We'll be on the pod. We're recording on Wednesday afternoon. It's going to be on YouTube. So I'd say it's out Thursday at some stage. I don't know exactly what time. That's producer Mark's job. I don't bother with that sort of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that, chatting Eurovision with the lads. But right now we're looking forward to Chester's day 2. We're recording before not only day 1 has started, before prizes are out, actually, which is a bit of a nightmare. Just looking here on some of these ITV races. So you would have known where the anti-post angle was, though, right, Rory? You wouldn't keep an eye on those anti-post prices.
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, let's just assume you were. We're going to kick off with a 5 furlong handicap. Lovely for 4-year-olds and upwards. At least we've got the draw in this race. The top weight is Democracy Dilemma. There's been a few of those recently. Robert Cowell, the trainer, Tom Marcand, gets the ride. I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 previous course winners, of which 6 have won over the 5 furlong trip, Rory. That's my angle into the race. Back a horse who likes it at Chester.
Yes, that's never a bad approach at Chester. I didn't think this was the strongest race. A lot of horses ended up in the hope of getting more soft ground by the looks of it. I prefer a lot of these with digging the ground. Democracy Dilemma obviously won here on heavy ground in September. Who else has been right? Vintage Clarence has his last 4 runs on heavy ground. Manila Scouse is at his best with digging the ground. I think he's interesting going forward this season, Manila Scouse, but whether I want him today is another matter. Spoof needs it very soft as well. Plenty of them would like the soft ground. Harking back though to Democracy Dilemma, he would definitely like to make a print, but I don't think he needs it very soft. I think he's the most interesting horse in the race here. Still pretty low mileage as a 4-year-old. He's gone to Robert Cowell this season in the colours of Fitri Hay. And he was last seen running in a listed race at Jebel Ali. I think you can put a line through that. Had previously finished 3rd at Maidan on the turf off a mark of 98. That's a perfectly decent bit of form. That was on typical good Maidan ground. So they have a very good carpet of grass there. It's obviously, it doesn't get wet very often at Maidan in the spring. That's a good effort from him. He has run three times at Chester, won two of them. He won his maiden here, I think, on good to soft ground, and obviously won that handicap last year of 92 on heavy with a visor. He's not worn the headgear this season. He doesn't seem to have. Obviously, he was a bit disappointing last time out, but that was dirt and listed company over 5 furlongs. So I'm not particularly worried about that. He's fit enough, and Robert Kyle has been getting winners this season. He's not exactly banging them in at the moment, but he's had quite a lot of horses who struggled last season who then won first time out this year. So I'm happy enough with Robert Kyle's form, particularly with his sprinters. And I thought Democracy Dilemma, plenty of early toe, drawn and stalled to Roman Dragon, I don't think can match him to the bend. So I think Democracy Dilemma looks very likely to get to the lead. Clearpoint can lead, but he sort of missed it and got a bump at Chester last time, and he's the one who's drawn and stalled three. Old Copper Knight will probably pop up at some stage this season, probably at York, where he holds the record for most races won. But I can't really fancy him here. Ditto Vintage Claret. So and Michaela's Boy is a horse I liked last season, but he was very disappointing at Musselboro in his reappearance and wears a tongue tie for the first time, suggesting that he's got a little bit of a breathing issue. He'll pop up again when they get him right, but he doesn't look ready to fire at the moment. So quite a lot of these who are well positioned don't look like they're ready to hit top form for a while, whereas Democracy Dilemma has had those two runs behind him and comes from a yard who's been getting winners after a break this season. So I thought he had a very strong chance on the pick of his form, and everything's ideal for him. He's got a very good jockey on board. He's got the best of the draw. The ground will suit. Yeah, look, ticks all the boxes, I think.
Democracy Dilemma then, top weight, hoping for around about, looking at other firms, the price is up around 13 to 2 is the price he was on Tuesday afternoon. Trying to think of what day we're at, which is when we're recording, by the way, about 1:45 on Tuesday. On to a maiden. Oh, thank you, ITV Television. They're giving us a maiden, a 6 furlong maiden for juveniles, so not a huge amount of form to go on. But the two who possibly will make the market do have form: Tej A for Carl Burke and Clifford Lee, who was second on debut, and Jessica Harrington sending one over in the Cooper Silks, passing phase. Tom Marcan booked to ride a nice third on debut in a heavy ground Curra maiden over the straight five. Other horses who are possibly going to be fancy: David Lochnan and Hugo Palmer have got interesting newcomers. Simply Blue and the Flying Seagull, 11-2, or sorry, around about that sort of price. Rashabar for Brian Meehan in the, I'm calling them the Sangster colours. They go under Manton, do they? Manton Thoroughbreds?
Yes, yeah, but they are, yeah.
It is Sangster colours. Right, the Cooper Silks, I love it. Godolphin can't even have all blue in Ireland because
I know, Cooper, it's great, yeah. Philippa Cooper's, she had two sets of colours, before she got those as well. So, or she had used two sets of colours prior to
getting the all blue.
The all blue, all royal blue being used. So that's very clever.
Wonder will passing phase have to wear something slightly different in the UK, because obviously Godolphin have got the all blue.
Well, I'd imagine the fact that she has other colours registered in the UK might mean that those. So those would be her colours in Ireland. But she does have UK colours which are different.
I wonder if Sheikh Mohammed had a phone call with her saying, "Hello, hi, can I have your colours, please?" Naff off.
Godolphin bought them off the person who had them in this country, I think, was Alan Billy.
Oh.
Maybe he was a Chester specialist as a trainer, and he sold them to Godolphin for a considerable sum. So he did a good deal there. And of course, Sheikh Hamdan can't have his colours in
Ireland. Yeah.
In Ireland either, because of who?
Oh, there's a shout now. I can tell you what the difference is. He basically has a light blue and royal blue cap is the only difference. I don't know what the shadow, who has the Shadwell colours in Ireland. Go on then.
Well, I haven't seen them in a long, long time, but they are registered, and that's all you need for them to be registered. But I'll let you stew on that for a while.
Oh, you're some boyo. Okay, go on then. You tell us what wins the 205 at Chester while I try to think about that.
But I've gone for one Hugo Palmer newcomer in the Lily Agnes, and if I'm right on that, then I'd be back in the Flying Seagull here, 65,000 euro yearling, son of Kodiak, out of a 5 furlong winner who comes from a pretty decent family. And I thought, again, this is one who would be trying to work out who owns it. And I almost got on one of my rants here. The owners are 2+3, 2+4. I'm just waiting for the day when the owners of a horse are just listed as none of your business. It's always nice to have half an idea who owns a horse, but you can basically have a partnership and call it whatever you like. And although in the racing calendar, I think you have to submit who the major partners are, any member of the public can't find that information out. So if you want to know who owns a horse, you get very little chance unless they fancy telling you these days. So I don't know who that is, but I imagine some of them are footballers, is all I can say. The Flying Seagull, probably Brighton footballers as well, given the blue and white colours and the fact that it's called the Flying Seagull. So we'll find out. We'll find out in the day when they get interviewed on TV.
I'd say so. And also the dam, good Coolmore connections with that dam as well, which probably muddies the water somewhat. You're So Beautiful. She ran the Shanahan Silks, didn't she? Jeez.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, like I mean, there could be a sneaky little bit of Tabor in there or something. You never know.
It could be, but obviously she was again. The fact that she was sold as a yearling suggests that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't. But being sold as a yearling doesn't necessarily mean you're breaking the bond of ownership either. So it's all a mystery these days. Yeah, in a race where it's difficult to form conclusions, Passing Phase is obviously very interesting because why would Jessie Harrington bother bringing a horse over at all for a maiden race unless she thought it had a big chance of winning. Again, you know, that third at the Curragh is okay for him. It doesn't look exceptional, but he did look like he needed the run for experience as much as anything else. So I thought Passing Phase will improve a fair bit for that. And of those with the experience, I thought he probably had most chance. The horse with the best form in the book is Rasha Bar, but Brian Meehan's only had one winner this season. And his horse has just been he's got an interesting one in the D Stakes, but his horses haven't been running particularly well as a rule. So whether Rasha Bar is able to improve. Normally, you'd say Brian Meehan, 2-year-olds always improve from debut. But the yard's just a little bit in and out at the moment, which makes it difficult. So I'll take a chance on the Flying Seagull. But again, you couldn't be punting on the back of that. You want to see positive signs in the paddock and stuff. But he's the one who caught my eye.
Lovely. The Flying Seagull for the mystery owners. We'll see Tony Bloom in the prating and suddenly he'll half in price. And there we go. Job done. Right. That's the maiden on the card. Onto a 7.5 furlong handicap, nearly a mile. It's a bit of lap. Chester and Never So Brave. Colours made famous here at Chester by Chris Kinn all those years ago. He won the D Stakes before going on to win the Derby. 13-8, or it's probably going to be about 13-8. I'm looking at a tissue. I'll be honest. I'm looking at other firms who price the race up right. So he's 13-8 with another firm, which will give you an idea. We're looking then at Brunel Nation, who won his last two. Grey Cube and Dashing Darcy, they're all going to be around the 7-1 mark. Nelly Lalax, double figures and thereabouts. So this is a classic Sir Michael Stout, potential improver into handicaps. Are we looking at a group horse? We'll have to be if he wins off 94.
He will definitely have to be a black type performer. That's, again, the bare form of that Thirsk win needs to be improved upon, but it's such a Sir Michael Stout thing that the 2-year-olds don't get pushed too hard, and they do gradually improve at 3 rather than suddenly improving to show all they can do early on. That was a heavy ground race. He won by 4 lengths in the end. Not the easiest race in the world to get a handle on. The second, third, and fourth haven't run since. But Mystery of the Sands, who was well beaten in fifth, was beaten less than a length and a handicap off a mark of 68. So if you want to extrapolate that, he was probably 40-odd pounds inferior to Never So Brave on the day. But that's always a dangerous thing to do, to basically say, well, he's a 68 horse. You had 40 on, so oh, he's well in of 94. That appeared to sort of frank the form to some degree, but I don't like taking horses who were well down the pack as an indicator of how strong the form is. If you've got 4 or 5 horses coming out of a race and they were all sort of mid-division and they've all run well since, that tends to give an idea that the race might have been deeper than it looked. But I've got a lot of respect for Never So Brave. The only thing I would say is I find it virtually impossible to back Sir Michael Stout handicapped debutants with this kind of profile because they're always going to be as short as they possibly can be. And they will win plenty of times. They'll maybe win 25% of the time, which is a pretty good strike rate with handicapped debutants. But if they're always going to be 13-8 or 7-4, you're not making any money, are you? So I struggle to back a horse like that. But that's not because I've got any negatives about it. The only negative is the fact that by definition, bookmakers, odds compilers, players on the exchange always make these horses a little bit shorter than they should be. So I don't have an awful lot of confidence punting against him either, with not an awful lot of prices around. But I'd certainly give Gunfighter a chance. What price have you got him? Well, what price has somebody else got him?
Beautifully changed, yeah. Gunfighter by...
Oh, I'll take that back. Not Gunfighter, I'll take that back. Celtic Warrior, the horse beneath him.
Oh, okay, Celtic Warrior. Well, I'll guarantee you double figure odds anyway. He's around, let's say, let's call the window between 12s and 18, 20 to 1, somewhere between there.
Yeah, see, I'd much rather be having a small bet on a horse like Celtic Warrior at double figure odds than having a big bet on the likely favourite here, Never So Brave. Celtic Warrior looks a little bit more exposed, but he's improved in his last couple of starts. They've both been on the all weather, but again, this is a horse who's bred to improve at three. So I would say that his improvement has come through maturity rather than because he prefers the surface. Now, you look at his form, he ran quite well on the all weather on his second start. So his best run as a 2-year-old came at Chelmsford, where he made the running. He was well beaten at Doncaster in that Weatherby Scientific sales race, where he wouldn't have had the speed for that, I wouldn't have said. So you can look at that and say, well, he clearly isn't as good on turf. I don't really buy into that. I think we don't know if he's as good on turf, but I think there's a fair chance that he will be. His pedigree is not a pedigree that suggests that he needs the all-weather. He showed a really good attitude to win last time. I made all the running, but he was strongly pressed by Mashadi, who appeared to be travelling better than him. But he fought back bravely to win by a neck, or a head rather. That was over the 7 furlongs. Again, he's got a pedigree that suggests that he will improve for the extra 127 yards here. He looks like he'll stay a mile. He's drawn in stall 2. Osher Murphy's on board. Andrew Balding is a trainer with a very good record with his horses at Chester. I did actually do some sums. I reckon in the last 10 years, just looking at trainers who tend to send horses to the Chester May meeting, Andrew Balding's had 70 runners at Chester in the last 10 years in May. And of those, 16 have won. So 23% strike rate. Again, good strike rate, as Sir Michael Stout does, but you get a price in the Balding runners. If you back them all blind, you'd be £585.80 ahead to a tenner at the Betfair SP. And obviously, you've got to shop around for early prices to see how you would do with that.
Shop around. Just take the Paddy Power price. It's all good.
Absolutely.
It's okay. We need to bet.
It doesn't tell me what Paddy Power prices are on this.
Yeah, the best price. I'll just go the best price. The best price.
So it shows that you get a better run for your money historically with the horses that Andrew Balding selects here, simply because at a bigger price. He's got the same kind of strike rate as Sir Michael Stout. But we're still a little bit in awe of Sir Michael, aren't we? When he's got a horse that looks unexposed, we tend to overreact a little bit to his chance.
Yeah, well, we'll see how the market reacts to that. Ryan Moore on board, obviously, as well. But that is the likely favourite, Celtic or Celtic Warrior for Rory. A nice each-way price, we hope.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
On to the D Stakes, the Derby trial, listed over a mile and a quarter and change. Just the 5 runners here. And God's Window for the Gosdens, put in 2-1 favourite on Tuesday morning after Dex. 11-4 JRB for Brian Meehan and Sean Levy. You've got Bracken's Laugh, could be a big week for Sean Mulryan, having taken the Punchestown Gold Cup about a week earlier. He's got a potential Derby horse in Bracken's Laugh with Richard Hughes, the trainer. Capulet is the Aidan O'Brien, Ryan Moore horse at 7-2, beaten his last 3 though, and 16-1 Harper's Ferry. Okay, only the 5 of them in the D Stakes, Rory, but backable prices, all of them.
They are, and there's not much to choose between them on form. JRB is the horse that has given Brian Meehan his only winner of the season. He looked a good horse on his debut at Newmarket last year and then was thrown into the Grand Criterium, which was won by Rosalian. He was beaten 6 lengths that day, but that was a big run for a horse having just his second start and off the back of a break as well. And then he won the The Field and Stakes by 3.25 lengths on his reappearance at Newbury. That's the Newmarket rather. That's the best piece of form in the race. But the question is, you know, are you worried about Brian Meehan's form? And even if you were worried about Brian Meehan's form, you might decide that, well, if JRB is able to run as well as he did with the yard out of form, he might be even better than he looks. It's a little bit off-putting for me that since then it hasn't really seen a revival in the fortunes of the stable. But he's obviously a good horse. All his runs have come in very quick ground so far. But to be honest, there's no rain forecast for Chester, and it might be on the fast side of good on Thursday anyway. So I wouldn't put you off there. I thought the one that might just be underrated was Bracken's Laugh, who will be a similar sort of price to Capulet, won't he? Or maybe even a bigger price than Capulet.
He's only a point different between them at the moment. Yeah, 137-2. But
Bracken's Laugh beat Capulet pretty easily last time. In the what are they called? The Woodford Reserve. I think it's the richest race ever run at Chelmsford, isn't it? The Woodford Reserve Cardinal Condition Stakes. Because it's part of this road to the Kentucky Derby, it's worth an awful lot of money. So 51,540 to the winner. Bracken's Laugh, despite missing the kick a little bit, has ended up winning well from Orne and Capulet. I know that Orne was held in reasonably high regard as well. Capulet was disappointing on the day, and the question with him, again, as the sun has justified, is he going to fulfill early promise? He's been a little disappointing. Obviously, he was in pretty deep company on his second start, but disappointing favourite in the Royal Lodge, where he looks short of toe. He's stepping up in trip here, which should suit based on his damn wedding vows record. But again, we have that justify issue that people will have to toss around in their minds about whether Capulet is going to progress. God's Window, his last two runs have come in heavy ground. That's a slight question mark for me. He was impressive at Nottingham last time out, but he was 1-14, so he's entitled to be as impressive as he was. He of course finished third in the Futurity at Doncaster last year, the Cameco Futurity, as it was quickly renamed. That's a very good run on paper. It was on heavy ground. I'd like to see him do it on good ground before I really get stuck in. And the outsider is liable to be Harper's Ferry, who I think is capable of outrunning his odds. I thought he shaped very well when second on his reappearance at Doncaster, behind a very promising sort. And then he won a conditions race at Windsor last time out with his head in his chest. It wasn't particularly strong form, but he'll improve as well. I wouldn't rule him out. But I think I'd probably make Bracken's Laugh the value in the race. I think a few people will look at the fact that he was a slight shock winner of that Woodford Reserve conditions race at Chelmsford. I think people will still think there might have been an element of luck about that, but I think he was clearly the best horse on the day there. And you watch the race again, it's difficult to make any excuses for the second or third. He needs to translate that to turf, but he was a winner on heavy on his debut at Newbury. And then he was in, again, another one. He was thrown into Group 1 company on his second start, and he ran very well in the Criterion de Saint-Cloud. Beaten four lengths in the end on his second start in October. Clearly needed the experience there as well. Improved to win at Chelmsford. He will be perfectly happy back up and trip. Bear in mind his run at the back end there was over a mile and a quarter in France, and connections clearly believe that he will stay well. He's got a lot of stamina on the damn side of his pedigree as well. So he appeals to me more than the others. Again, the usual provisos. It's a classic trial for unexposed three-year-olds at Chester, and it's not some. I certainly haven't made my bread and butter hunting in races like this, but he's the one who appeals most to me.
All right. Bracken's Laugh, as mentioned, for the Sean and Bernie Mulryan team, so to speak. Richard Hughes trains that one, and could be massive 8 days for him after Fast or Slow did the business of Punchestown. Quite the double, that one. On to the Ormond Stakes, this one for the older horses, over a mile, 5.5 furlongs. It's Group 3, and it's headed in the market by Arrest for the Gosdens. And his somewhat disappointing reappearance at Newbury in the Dubai Duty Free Final Surprise Stakes, we used to know it as a John Porter. Not the only horse disappointed in that race or ran a poor race. Al-Sakib was also in that race. He's a much bigger price, 7-4, 6-4 Arrest. In between them, Point Lonsdale, 9-4, Deauville Legend on seasonal debut, 9-2. And then Enemy, who runs often at Chester, but hasn't won at Chester. Ian Williams, 14-1. L'Astronome and Winter Wilds, the other ones. Right, so 6-4 Arrest. He's strong in the market. I think Absurd was in this anti-post, but he might have been taking a bit of the market. 6-4 for me. He's going to have to make a big step forward from his seasonal debut.
He is. He was a bit disappointing there. And I thought it was possible it was needed, but it doesn't tend to be needed from the Gosden yard. I know a few of his three-year-olds look like they would come on for a run, but I think it's different with your older horses when you're aiming them at group races. The top stables tend to have them pretty ready. And I thought Arrest was disappointing. One or two making excuses for the fact that he went very wide. But I think if you watch him winning under Frankie Dettori at Newbury, and the Geoffrey Freer did the same thing, didn't he? In actual fact, I think on a couple of occasions, Frankie was keen to have him racing on his own to help him settle in his races. So Kieran Sherman was just doing the same thing that Frankie had done. And it actually seemed to, it worked very well for much of the race. He looked like he was going to play a big hand to the finish. And then he found very little for pressure. Maybe it was just fitness. But I don't think his form from last season is especially, I think it's especially strong, really. Obviously, he ended up finishing second in St. Ledger, but he promised an awful lot prior to that. He was impressive at this meeting last year, but that was on heavy ground. And straight afterwards, Frankie Dettori said he's always going to need lots of give in the ground. He's not going to get it here. Now, he proved when winning on good ground in Newbury last season that he doesn't need it heavy. But at the same time, I don't think that Newbury win in the Geoffrey Freer is good enough to win this. Well, it's unlikely to be good enough to win this race, depending if everyone brings their A game. I thought this was tough. The obvious one is Point Lonsdale. But whether he's a proper stare at a mile five is a question mark. I think there's a reasonable chance in this race that Ryan Moore is able to get to the front and Point Lonsdale and just make this tactical and use the horse's speed to win. I thought he should have been favourite for this. He's been a little bit disappointing last year, but he was hardly disgraced in the Dubai Shima Classic last time out. Bearing in mind, he went off 100-1 for that race. He's only been beaten five lengths, having been hassled for the lead early on, got himself to the front and then weakened late in the day. That was a much better effort than he put in at Doha on his previous start. My worry with, I don't think he really stays a stiff mile and a half, and this is a mile and five. But I can actually see a scenario where Ryan gets him to the front, just slows things down, turns it into a tactical affair, and then uses his tactical speed from the home turn to nick it. But it would be a case of him, you know, belying his stamina to win. But I can definitely see it happening. And I don't think the opposition is super strong. Billville Legend is very, very interesting on his three-year-old form. Of course, he ran an absolute cracker to be fourth in the Melbourne Cup. But he disappointed twice at the back end of last season, particularly in the King George at Ascot, where he was second last and tailed off. But he did run well in his reappearance. What slightly worries me with him is they put headgear on him after he disappointed at Ascot, and he ran just okay, was beaten favourite at Windsor in the August Stakes. They've now switched up to blinkers, and that just strikes me that the horse is becoming a little bit harder to train and a little bit too clever. He could be good enough to win this first time out, but the change of headgear is worrying for me. So I end up going with negatives for all the runners and come out with Point Lonsdale in the hope that Ryan Moore just rides him to sleep, which has happened often enough before.
Yeah, he's pretty good at it. Right, so Point Lonsdale in the Ormond, the 340. We hope to have a Jumps race live on ITV, and indeed we will. Huntingdon, no concerns with the track. Obviously, we didn't get the jumping on Wednesday, but there's a one handicap hurdle at 150 they're going to show on ITV. It's called the Virgin Bet Handicap Hurdle, to give them a shout out. 2 miles, 3.5 furlongs. King of the Road is going to be chasing a three-timer and will surely be favoured for this race for Benz, Pauling and Jones. Cave Tara Tara is an interesting one for Alan King. She bombed out in a good race last time out, but has course and distance form. James Owen's got Forget the Way. Who else are we looking at? Oh, the Skeletons have got one in Cotty. And as we know, Rory, everyone says back Venetia Williams in May when the ground gets quick. she's got Fortinet in the race as well. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I don't think Venetia Williams has ever been seen between May and November. Certainly not in the UK anyway.
Go to Huntington, so.
Yeah, this is... I try to get a bit of result in this because there is a... the likely favourite King of the Road did show signs of temperament last time out. Caelan Woods had to get serious with him. He set out to make all the running at Market Raisin last time. I haven't done the same thing at that track at the end of March. And it looked like he was going to have it all his own way. But then he met a strong challenge from Commanding View, and Caelan had to get stuck into him. And when Caelan got stuck into him, the horse, he responded well enough to come away from the runner-up, but he did flash his tail twice quite significantly on the run-in. And you do have a slight worry that when horses do that, you know, you look at them and say, well, it hasn't stopped him winning that race, but it's always, there's only so many times you can go to the well with a horse that flashes his tail like that. I suspect he's still well enough handicapped to win, though. He's got 12-1 on his back, which is plenty of weight for a five-year-old. But although he's gone up 10 pounds for winning last time out, the first and second came 25 lengths clear in what looked a competitive race on paper. And I would, I'd be very keen on backing the second if he turned up again, but he's not here and doesn't have any entries at the moment, but he's a horse who's worth backing, Commanding View. And I think King of the Road has a little bit in hand off his mark. I suspect he's a 120 horse. So although I'd have slight misgivings about him temperamentally, I think he again should pretty much get the run of things from the front. There aren't too many you want to go forward here. Most of these are hold-up horses. The King of the Road ought to get the run of things in front. Fotinet races handily. Jaramillo for Warren Greatrex, that made the running last time out, but didn't find an awful lot for pressure. And it was similar on his previous outing. So whether they want to go forward with him or not, I don't know. But he's the other one who has made the running in the past. And if they don't go forward in Jaramillo, then King of the Road might just get the run of things here. And Ben Jones, I don't think, will make too many mistakes with him. They'll look to coax him home rather than go for the persuader, as it were. But he's well enough handicapped to win, and he's probably found the ideal setup again in a race where nothing wants to take him on early, and it's a case of going the right sort of pace, getting them in trouble and hoping nothing comes at him late in the day where he might be vulnerable. But I couldn't find one with a really strong profile to throw down that late challenge.
Fair enough. King of the Road to make hay while the sun shines. That could be three in a row for him. All right, that's Thursday wrapped up. Best bet on Thursday. Is it going to come in the... No, it's not going to come in the D Stakes or the Ormond Stakes. So it's going to be one of the handicaps.
It has to be one of the older horses, doesn't it? So that means... Oh, I've got to go back to my race card again, don't I?
You go Democracy Dilemma, Celtic or Celtic Warrior, unlikely, or... Democracy Dilemma's gone heavy odds on, just as I'm looking at your selections here.
Democracy Dilemma will is the obvious nap at this stage.
That's fine. Democracy Dilemma in the Fitri Hay Silks. Don't think Jamie Spencer's riding on Thursday. You have a better chance. There you go. He gets too many mentions in this podcast, doesn't he? That doesn't seem to be riding either of the Fitri Hay. He usually does.
He does, yeah. And he has ridden for Fitri Hay this season. So it's not like, if there's been a bust up, it's been very, very recent.
I'd say maybe he can't ride. Maybe he's banned or something like that.
Maybe he's off picking up more horses for Paul Shanahan.
That's a nice little job to have, isn't it? A blank checkbook. Right. We are done for Thursday. Thank you very much, Rory. As I said, we have podcasts all week long. We'll be back for Friday, but the addition of Joe Logue to make things perhaps even more interesting as well. So Joe's going to join myself and Roy to look ahead to Friday's action, and then we'll be back again to look ahead to Saturday's racing, which is headed by the Linkfield trials amongst... Oh, yes, your Tricast races on Saturday, Rory.
Oh, yes, the Victoria Cup. Lovely.
Yes, we'll get your Tricast in that. So
they have been at work to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Don't mind them.
And Tricast race, of course, you mean. You did say Tricast, didn't you?
I did say Tricast.
You didn't say Trifecta.
I never used the Fecta. No, never used the Fecta. No, you can only do a Tricast. Have a fabulous Thursday, everyone. I hope the weather is still as good as it's supposed to be. As I said, loads of podcasts. Watch out on Paddy Power Racing YouTube for our Eurovision special with Frank Hickey and Stephen Cass. Looking ahead to the big betting event of the week, as I said. But loads of racing in between. Stay well, stay safe. Back a few winners, folks. Talk to you again.